Save on quality sofas, sectionals, top brand mattresses, and more during Haverty's President's Day sale. Find the style of furniture you've been looking for at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Well, hello, witches and beautiful souls. Swales here, introducing the episode. Can you believe this is our 10th episode? I know, I'm proper buzzing to be here. It's amazing we've made it this far and we haven't suffered from the old pod fade that I often read about. But yeah, welcome to our very special episode. This was going to be a lot different because for our celebratory episode, we decided to do a big ass interview type one. We've got a guest speaker on, Beverly Thornton, who is an amazing pagan photographer who did our recent celebratory photographs for the podcast out in the wilderness with some toys and some props, my broom and a coffee cup, and they came out so good. You'll probably have seen one or two on our Instagram. But we're going to, you know, slowly drip feed you them because we don't want to blow all the poppers at once. But they were brilliant. They were such a joy to do. And as we were doing them, it became obvious that we should interview Beverly because of all the knowledge she had on photography, but like the history of witches represented. You know, they were represented in the early 20th century, how it was very much, you know, a male gaze, masculine dominated view of women, how, you know, like sexy a witch were portrayed, sort of soft porn. And then we'll go through the 20th century and see how it progressed, you know, like when real witches started getting photoed and stuff. And she talks about the hags and slags movement, which makes me laugh just so much, you know, and where the typical witch, how the look of the typical witch, you know, like grot bags, the green face with the cornflakes stuck on your chin. And, you know, she briefly speaks about how it all began and where we are now and her own journey as a photographer who takes pictures of the pagan community. It's a really interesting episode. And there's lots of names you can go and research and find out more about history-wise, not just photography, but like the whole movement of Wicca and witchcraft and paganism. I do apologise for the sound quality. We unfortunately had to do it on Zoom because it was a freeway call and the internet was just not our friend. And I've tried to edit best I can, but there is some bits that I can't seem to get around and I've tried quite hard. I hope it's not too much of a pain for your ears to listen, but it is well worth sticking around. Yeah, notice-wise, I have had, well, it's the six-week holiday now, isn't it? So everything's going to be a little bit delayed because we've got our little ones off school for 6 whole weeks during the summer. And so there'll be a lot of camping and holidays and being away and day tripping. Also, since I last spoke to you, I took a plunge and I went to meet the people who run the Bone Down community. So it's a poetry community that are all about taking public spaces back. So they meet publicly in parks around Leeds city centre and the surrounding boroughs. There's no money involved. They just have a banner that says Bone Down and people go and read their poetry there. So I took a plunge to meet them because I was a Tuesday free, which doesn't happen during school time. And I signed up and I read three of my poems out, which was so scary, but also quite uplifting. And I was really proud of myself that I took a plunge and I did it. But bloody hell, my heart was pumping. So on the 20th of August, I am going to be at their event in Headingley, I think it is, in the Poetry Rooms in Headingley. And it's going to be 12 till 6 celebratory event, celebrating the launch of their Bone Down poetry zine, which yours truly has also got a poem in the pages of. So I will be there reading my poetry out aloud. If you're around and you're free, come on down, see the face behind the random bamblings on this podcast. LS16 Makers Market. So this is a local talent market, which is going to be every second Sunday of the month at High Farm in LS16. There's going to be a lot of different types of people there, some spiritual, some not. I'll be there with my bell tent offering affordable Reiki in my little Delilah, and I'll have a few decks and witchcraft associated tools that you can have a gander at and maybe purchase, but mainly I just want to meet you. The last time I was out, I was doing Reiki at Left Bank in the Cozy Caravan, and a fan came over to me and gave me a crocheted toadstool, and I was just absolutely chuffed of it. It was such a lovely thing to receive. And yeah, I just want to say thank you to that listener, because it really does mean a lot to me. I like receiving gifts. It is a joy to be known and to be appreciated, because I do this in my own time for free. I love doing it, but it can be a bit stressful and time consuming. But yes, thank you for the gift. I absolutely adore it. And the next time I'm at Left Bank, I think, is the 6th of September from 6 p.m. onwards in the Cozy Caravan. Feel free to contact me on my Instagram or the Bellwitch podcast Instagram, whichever's easiest. Slide into my DMs and we can arrange to book you in. Anyway, that'll be it now from Swales and all the chuntering going on. I just felt like I needed to give you a bit of a notice board, as we're going to go dive straight in now to Beverly's guest spot on the podcast. So enjoy, grab yourself a drink, put your feet up, and I'll see you on the other side. Hello and welcome everybody to another edition of the Bellwitch podcast. This is a special episode because we've got another awesome witchy guest in. I'd like you to meet Beverly Thornton, witch extraordinaire, who is an amazing photographer who took all our pictures for the Bellwitch podcast promo stuff. So welcome, Beverly.
Thank you, Emma. It's a pleasure to be here.
And
it's interesting that, because I don't really identify as a witch. I identify as pagan, but not witch.
My mistake. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Just presuming there. Okay, so do you want to tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on here. I've had the pleasure of doing a personal project based on paganism, which her own case dates back probably to the 1990s, although I've always felt pagan, but I think it was the 1990s when I suddenly sort of realised there was a name for it and kind of identified with that term. So I had the opportunity as an amateur photographer to do an online mentoring course. I felt a bit stagnant in my photography and I wanted to do something with a little bit more vigor and rigor. And so I joined up to an online mentoring course with Maria Faulkner and Paul Hill, who are two very eminent photographers. Paul Hill actually has an MBE in service to photography. Maria has got an amazing portfolio. She specializes a lot in dance photography and is currently doing some amazing work with dancers in the Ukraine, in those circumstances out there in a war zone. Pretty eminent stuff, you know, stuff that you think, woo. But I just felt I wanted something a bit deeper than the kind of photography I was doing. So it was a bit of an eye-opener. It was a bit like going back to school or uni or college or something, you know, with the kind of depth that you had to go into it and doing research and really thinking about your practice. Out of that, one of the things we had to do was a short project. It had to be completed between September and December of 2021, which was the length of the mentorship. So I thought about it and I thought, what would I really like to photograph? You know, it needed to be something that felt meaningful. And of course, that was the run up to Halloween. And suddenly you're seeing all these images everywhere of witches who look like goth Barbies. You know, they're absolutely sort of curvy and immaculate, impossibly good looking. Particular thing that kind of triggered it was someone who makes fire pits. He did this wonderful fire pit that was this outline of a witch, but again it was this just this stereotype, and I thought, we still have that old, which has been called hags and slags, stereotype of witches. You know, they're either kind of all warty and you know, bro, you know, horrible old drones, or they're these impossibly sexy women that are very much determined by the male gaze and that impossible standard of women's beauty. And I thought, I know lots of pagans and witches, and they're all beautiful, but none of them look like that. You know, that's an impossible standard that's being brought onto a group of people that generally are much more, you judge their beauty by their spirituality and their power and their energy. It's not so much about the surface. So it just felt such an unfair representation. So from that, I thought, I'm going to do a project where I'm going to photograph my friends and other contacts and show contemporary pagans doing what pagans do. And of course, it was Halloween. One of the other things that comes out very clearly is the fear around pagans and witches. You know, we're actually promoted as figures of you know, fear and mystery, and which I know some people embrace, and that's absolutely fine. But there is that whole thing of demonizing the practice and the spiritual path. So again, I wanted something that challenged that a bit. And common theme that I know from everyone who I know who's a pagan is that reverence for nature and that connection with nature. So I wanted photographs that kind of represented that in some way and reflected that in some way. And that was my kind of aim in doing this work.
And it was so much fun. I was lucky enough to be part of this project.
Yeah, I'm making it sound a bit highbrow, but a lot of it was just like rocking up in the woods with your mates for an hour or so with your camera. I decided to work very much with natural light because I didn't want to carry a load of kit. It was just very much a one-to-one thing. So again, it was people I either knew or had been recommended to me and were willing to have their photos taken and be publicly acknowledged as pagan, because there's all sorts of issues around that. Which you might touch upon a bit in when we talk about the history of photography. But yeah, it was great to go out with people, and I asked them to pick somewhere that had meaning for them, or, you know, somewhere that they liked, or was their local woods that they might practice in or walk through, or just, you know, had a connection to. And so that was nice too, moving to a variety of places around West Yorkshire, which I'm based, and kind of responding to people and responding to them in those environments and trying to capture something of the energy and the connection that they had with those places and that sense of place.
Yeah, and the images you've got are absolutely beautiful, if I do say myself, because I'm part of one of them.
I got some crackers of you, because we went, well, I better not say where the place is because people might want to see us there again. We went to some local woods in the Leeds Bradford area, and we did quite a few photos of you in kind of your witchy clothing, which I know you like to wear. I ask everyone to sort of peer as they want to be represented, and for some people that's pretty ordinary clothing, very everyday, and for others it's been full bells and whistles, cloaks, swords, the lot. And so you came as you wish to be represented with a few of your sacred objects, as I remember. And then as we were talking, it became clear that you usually work sky clad
in the bedroom. So I said,
in the bedroom, because this was out in the local woods. So we kind of cheekily looked at each other, and I said, well, I've got my big clay cloak in the car. I went back and got my big cloak so that we could use it as kind of a prop and also be a little bit discreet, but also so you could quickly cover up if we needed to. Now the law in the UK is that it's okay to be naked in public, but if it causes public alarm, then it's not, and it's actually a criminal offence. So we were treading that line in a wood, loads of dog walkers walking
a Tuesday morning in October, late October.
We got some images that I was really pleased with, and you look so beautiful and liberated in them. So it was well worth pushing that particular boundary that we agreed, obviously, to kind of get those few shots of you either completely sky clad or wrapped in the cloak and reacting to the environment around you. One of my favorite shots. So yeah, the photography very much came out of each person, what they wanted to bring, the environment we were in, and it was very much almost like a collaboration, a dance between the two of us to create the images. There was no pressure, but there was a willingness to explore. So that's kind of the way it worked.
I was wondering quite a lot of questions that I've got milling around my head, and I'm also soaking in everything that you're saying as well. So there were a few questions. One was, which was your preference out of the images of people that came in all bells and whistles and people who dressed more ordinarily, because it's quite a divisive subject within paganism. I mean, we joke about it a little bit. I like getting all my bells and whistles on, but there's like jokes about it being like LARPing sometimes. And people tend to sit on either side of the fence where they absolutely love getting dressed up, they feel like the best self, or they think, well, witches are just ordinary people in everyday clothing. I kind of sit in the middle, one foot on either side of the fence. But I wondered if you'd had any sort of preference during your photos, because I imagine the really creative ones, you know, where people turn up in like everything, I imagine that's like, that's where you get your wow photos, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because it was a fine line that I trod between wanting the authenticity and the connection with nature and capturing people doing what they'd ordinarily do, but you know, within the context of it being outside, not everybody works outside, but also that performative aspect that, yeah, if someone is wearing a costume or has a sword to wave around, or, you know, has a cauldron in front of them that's smoking, it works much more in a direct visual representational way. So, yeah, there was always that pull, that tug between them. But some of my favourite photos also are of a friend of mine who is pagan, but not out as pagan. She's understandably, like a lot of people, worried about employment and other issues because of the misunderstandings that come around pagan practice. And so we shot her in a local woodland in clothing that she chose that would pass as normal, but it kind of blended a bit with the environment, and it had a certain sort of witchy vibe, if you want to call it that. You know, it was kind of loose green velvets, those kind of, yeah, the clothes that make people feel comfortable but also feel like they're textures and colors that resonate with nature. And we shot her anonymously. All of the pictures that we shot of her were done anonymously. So we've got a picture of her embracing a tree, but we're focusing in on the ring on her hand, on a ritual ring that means something to her on her hand, and her face is out of focus. Or we're doing photos where, again, she's kind of posing within the trees, but her face is down, she's got hair across her face, unless you knew who she was. And to be honest, she was actually wearing a wig, so she was pretty unrecognisable. And they also, there's something about the anonymity that actually lets the viewer read into them. So in a way, the kind of personality of the subject of the photo isn't a distraction. It kind of hones in straight away on, if you like, the connection with nature and the message I was trying to get across. And in some ways, I think they're some of my more successful photos, ironically. But yeah, I do get what you're saying. It's kind of, some people feel happy with nothing on. Some people feel happy working just what they've got with their normal clothing, particularly if they're in a public place. And other people were just loving the theatricality that can come with pagan practice and pagan costume. And it was lovely to embrace it all.
That's me. I'm very theatrical.
For me, I dress fairly alternative on any given day. So there are obviously days where it's like leggings and a jumper or what have you, but those tend to be like days where I'm like in a slump or what have you. But generally, on any given day, I'm wearing something quite quirky and quite unique. I've got quite heavy makeup on. So stepping into the sort of theatrical dress associated that I think a lot of people associate with paganism, and a lot of it's very sort of fantasy oriented, isn't it? And like based on like fantasy and medieval stuff, which is why I always say about the LARP connotation, because if you go to like a LARP convention, people will be dressed the same as at a pagan convention. And you can actually, I went to a medieval festival last week and I wore my pagan dress, beautiful red velvet witchy dress that just completely fit in with like the fantasy medieval theme. But yeah, I think there are a lot of pagans out there who tend to just dress complete, like you wouldn't have any idea that they were pagan.
My starting point was that I wanted to be able to have the people I was photographing feel as comfortable as possible, and to be able to sort of establish a rapport with the real person in front of me, because it was portraiture work. So it mattered that they represented themselves how they felt they would need to be. And when I did the first sort of call for people, I said, if you're a jeans and t-shirt witch, that's absolutely fine. Doesn't mean that they're not part of the whole pagan community and deserve representation as well. But yeah, I think generally pagan people tend to be a little bit on the alternative side.
I mean, we like racing stuff that as well. Yeah, we like stuff. It's like me and Swales, you know, if we went and had a coffee today, I'm in quite a flowery dress. Swales is usually wearing either blue or green and usually just like jeans and a few layers of like vests and waistcoats and cardigans.
Like an
Usually have our
onion
witchy jewellery on and our piercings and stuff.
and a hat.
Yeah, but take us to a pagan camp and it's like the bells are
OTT. Has to
full.
shine, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm packing my like my belly dancer belt and my massive blanket ponchos and
It's lovely to have these safer spaces where you can fully embrace who you are and show that, I think, in your clothing. And I think that's wonderful. And that is something that I did try to encapsulate in the photos I took, if people were willing to present themselves in that way. And most were, funnily enough, most were seeing it as an opportunity to embrace that.
I think for some people it's like it's a creative opportunity to let themselves shine, isn't it? And
Absolutely.
to kind of really immerse themselves in the image that you have in your head of you as a witch. Because for a lot of us, the reality is that day to day we do witchcraft. We may sit and draw sigils, we may wash our door down with cinnamon on the first of the month, or craft incenses, or be reading our witchy books, and we'll be doing those in our like normal clothing. But we have these images of ourselves as witches as well. And I feel like sometimes it doesn't match up with what you actually look like. So it gives people an opportunity to really present that side of themselves, doesn't it?
It's almost like stepping into your ideal self, isn't it, and representing that. It's an artistic, to me, it's performance art, really, in a way. And when we get onto the history of how it's been photographed, witchcraft and pagans, there is a lot of performance art that is a tradition of that, with photographs that have captured those moments, really. So yeah, it's an interesting one. I think particularly as yourselves, as young mothers with a family, kind of how what you would wear to camp or to do your ritual stuff is very different to what you might wear turning up at a school event, because there's different social pressures on you, really, aren't there, in those different circumstances? That there are different people have to make choices all the time at how much they embrace their pagan witchy self in everyday life, really.
I mean, especially like I experience this sort of daily, being obviously like doing full-time tarot reading, is that there are different events, different people want different things. So at a pagan camp, they might want something more akin to, really, really witchy OTT dress, where if I'm at like a 1920s bar, I'm always going to be a bit alternative, but I'm going to dress a little bit smarter. You've got different outfits for different situations, haven't you? And it just shows like how many different kinds of witch even one person can be.
I mean, I've always dressed weird before I were a witch. Witching came after. I was joking, like what I can wear to the school run, what I can get away with. Pointy hat.
I mean, I'm more or less the same. I mean, I became pagan and goth at around the same time. To be fair, I was actually like fairly pagan in childhood. I just didn't have a name for it back then. But by the time I had a name for it, I was already like goth. What was your journey into paganism like, Beverly?
Funny enough, I used to be involved in community radio. This is going back to like the 1990s, early 1990s. We were always looking for interesting people to interview. There was a woman called Sheila Brune, who was a local artist, who was running a series of courses at the local community college called Aspects of the Goddess. And this was back in the days when kind of further education or part-time education would just be leisure subjects for interest. You didn't have to have a qualification tied to it, which I think absolutely changed the whole way of, but those days there was really a variety of lovely things that used to be offered. And I thought, oh, that looks interesting. I'll interview her. And I ended up going to the sessions that she did. And it was a complete eye-opener, and it was a bit like coming home. There's just this whole thing about, my God, there's a goddess. That religion isn't this kind of narrow patriarchal system that's been kind of around. I mean, I've not been particularly practicing, but my children went to a C of E school, so I kind of had more of a flavour of it, and used to find myself getting quite angry at some of the things they were being taught. And suddenly this was like an opening up for God. Yeah, this kind of balance, this reclaiming of the goddess. And so that kind of got me interested in doing other things that the Sheila introduced me to. She introduced me to some people. And through that, I got involved with a group that was running at Hebden Bridge, which was a group of women who were very generously doing a kind of set of training sessions around all of the festivals. And so for like a year or so, and they taught the stages of doing a ritual in each one. So like the first one we did was kind of like you did purification, and the various stages that you might do were tied on. So by the end of doing a whole Wheel of the Year, you've kind of gone through the whole stages of what you needed to do to run your own ritual. We all just brought food to share, and it was very supportive, and the kind of rituals and ceremony did were very much around kind of empowering ourselves or our own self-development. So it was an absolutely lovely experience. From that, I ended up doing another year or so with a male partner, worked for a sort of another round of Wheel of the Year. And then after that relationship sort of ended, and therefore it was a case of like, where do I go now? And I got into shamanism. There were, again, various people, just things have tended to happen by serendipity. You know, you'd be doing something and then this name came up and you just thought, oh, I'll give that a go. And so for a while I was doing the kind of drumming, sweat lodge, journeying type stuff. And there used to be a woman who worked as a ranger over at Lotherton Hall at the time. And she was running these wonderful events in a teepee there that were kind of about protecting the environment, but had very much a shamanic sort of edge. And then other things, I ended up doing other sweat lodges in various places. And then it just got to a point where I got strong messages that I just needed to work on my own. So in a way, I reined all that energy back. And while I still called myself pagan, I wasn't very public or very active anymore, but I read books. I've always kind of followed the moon a little bit. And yeah, and then I kind of got into Five Rhythms dancing, which is another spiritual path that has so much.
Wow, I've heard of Five Rhythms. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, I was a massive Five Rhythms dancer for years and years, and organised local events. There's a lot of people, while it isn't a spirit, it's not a pagan path, there's a lot of people who embrace paganism within it. And again, it's about your spirituality, your development, as well as feeling that you're kind of inhabiting your body. It's one of those things that's always a bit ineffable, and it's quite hard to describe. So I was involved with that for a lot of years, and then got a feeling that I needed to stop that, and stopped it, and then embraced it again for a few years. And the thing that's kind of stopped me really has been the pandemic, and then a bit of decline in my physical health, really, which means I'm not quite as able to do 10-day workshops or whole weekend workshops as I used to. So that's basically my journey to it. So it's been one of those things that I've always danced around, and I've moved through. Oh, there was a bit where I actually was doing quite a lot in the Northern tradition, and I made my own drum in that tradition, and that's still one of my most prized possession. So I've had a bit of an eclectic path, really, but always kind of felt, yeah, I'm quietly pagan. I don't wave a big flag about it. But when there's chances to kind of engage in the community or do things like this project, I just love to take those opportunities, really.
That's cool. I like that you listened to your own intuition and you just followed stuff, you know, without succumbing to having to show people things, and which a lot of it, I think, I feel sometimes you've got to prove yourself a bit too much, which I'm getting over now as I get older. But when you start out, you feel like that, don't you?
I think I have the benefit of age, you know, and also you're just more tired that you can't bother to do. That's kind of my path, really.
Cool.
So Emma and I have been doing a sort of training for the last 3 years, isn't it? That's kind of with Louise, the Wiccan lady, who does a kind of witchy school.
Indeed she does, and that's where me and Beverly met. Brilliant. Thanks for that, Beverly. Interested to hear about how you got into it all. But you wanted to talk to us about the history of witches in photography, was it?
Yes, we talked a bit at the beginning about, as part of the mentoring project that I was doing, that we kind of had to do research, sort of proper research, you know, kind of, and do a bit of a presentation to the group. So it kind of focused the mind, really. But it was interesting for me to look back and see how witches and pagans had been represented, really. And it was mostly witches, to be honest. Pagans are a little bit hidden as a group. Witches are obviously the easy archetype to go for. So I kind of looked back over pretty much, it was most of the 20th century stuff, really, up to the present day. And one of the key figures right at the beginning was this chap called William Mortensen, who was a very eminent Hollywood photographer back in the sort of 1920s, early 30s. He did this series of witches, kind of soft porn with the nude witch on a broomstick, you know, the male, totally male fantasy type figures. But these were understandably quite popular. One of the interesting things about Mortensen's work is that he was almost one of the forerunners of what we'd call Photoshop now. He did a lot of manipulating his film with razor blades and scratching and other techniques to try and give a bit of atmosphere to them, so they weren't straight, beautifully lit portraits exactly like his Hollywood work had done. And it came to a bit of a grief in Hollywood, because he was, I think, alleged to have had some sort of affair with Fay Wray, who was the struggling woman in the hands of King Kong in the movie, that actress. And as a result, he kind of fell a little bit out of grace. So he started his own photographic school. For many years, was very influential with amateur photographers because he did a lot of teaching articles. Wasn't accepted by the mainstream. Ansel Adams, the famous photographer, called him the devil because they
Oh my
felt
God.
he's kind of, because of his fantasy subject matter and his techniques that weren't the very photorealistic sort of modernist fashion at the time. So yeah, he kind of fell a bit out of grace, but he was one of the early proponents of the glamorous woman on a broomstick archetype of a witch, if you like. And obviously that goes back into art. That's kind of, there's a history of that in the history of art, but I won't go too closely into that today. And then this one is we've all seen The Wizard of Oz, so that's very much Wicked Witch is the archetype there. And there was a famous photo done by Virgil Apgar, very influential in terms of photographic representation of witches. Then I jump forward to the 1950s, really. Of course, we've had the repeal of the Witchcraft Act in, I think it was 1951, wasn't it? And Gerald Gardner appears on the scene, publishing books like High Magic's Aid and other books. And you suddenly get a run through the 50s and 60s into the 70s of photographic representation of actual witches in books that are explaining witchcraft or kind of intended to inform. And there's a whole conflicted history there about whether people were happy about the secrets being revealed. And Gerald Gardner was very much, as I understand it, a proponent of explaining what went on because he wanted to recruit it. He recruit to the religion in a way that a lot of people say he founded. So in that sense, there are all these interesting photos, but they do tend again to be naked high priest. So the kind of, there's an interesting sort of if you like, dichotomy here of like these cozy pictures of people in their front rooms with, you know, patterned carpets, patterned wallpaper, and a whole lot of ritual objects doing things like this picture of Eleanor Raybone, who was associated with the Wiccan movement, I think initiated by Gardner. And then also these other ones where later on you've got the high priestesses like Maxine Sanders in states of sky cladness, if you want to call it that. And quite often the male figures are still clothed, the female are unclothed, but that also could be because of obviously the publication laws around it. There's a, you know, there's certain sort of sexism in that at the time. There's inequalities in that. So you do get these whole sets of kind of actual ritual photographs, or people, if you like, staging rituals to be photographed, whether they're the actual rituals or not. So yeah, that's kind of the context of the photography. Then you get up to kind of the 70s and you start to get, mostly from America, a blending of the women's movement and the witch archetype. There was this movement in America called, I'll just have to check the name because it's an acronym and I can never remember what it stands for because they kept changing what it stands for. So it was the Women's International Terrorist Conspiracy from Hell. And
oh
they staged
from hell.
Public, from hell, yeah. And they staged public demonstrations over various things like on Wall Street and other things, dressed as witches in the archetype or pointed hat. And it was very much done as a political movement. And then at other times they described themselves as women inspired to tell her collective history. That's another acronym for it. And then women incensed at telephone company harassment when some of them had some problems with the Bell telephone company. So it kind of was blended to change. And it was a very public representation of witches, but there were also lots of divisions within the sexual politics of it at the time. They were very left-leaning, apparently, and some other people felt they were kind of bringing the movement into disrepute, if you like, the women's movement into disrepute. So it's a whole new subject itself. But it's interesting that they chose that particular archetype to be, if you like, a figure of rebellion. Then there was some really interesting, brilliant work around connection with Earth. One of the other artists that kind of inspired me with this project was Anna Mendieta, who worked in the 1970s, did a lot of work around the connection with Earth. So she has these wonderful images that were actually sort of performance pieces where there's a hollowed out piece of rock that's the shape of a woman, a fiery outline that's just the fire that is a shape of a woman. This kind of philosophical belief that there was this kind of connection between inanimate and animate objects, that everything was connected, which I think resonates a lot with a lot of pagan thinking. Sadly died very young, really, in her early 40s. And then this one, Mary Beth Edelson, who did similar work at similar time, kind of goddess figures with big shell heads, powerful naked sort of poses, and long exposure photography with people in sort of circles of candles. So again, yeah, pretty much quite revolutionary for its time. And then coming up to present day, there's been some really interesting work done by American photographers, American female photographers, on representations of witches and other psychic and occult practitioners. And one of the key ones is Frances F. Denny, who's a book and an exhibition in 2020 called Major Arcana. And it's a selection of environmental portraits of witches. Again, people taken in places where they their own homes or where they feel comfortable. And they're very straight, very beautiful portraits of women just being, with a kind of statement for each portrait of kind of what their spirituality is about. So they've got a voice to these pictures. It's a lovely book. I've got a copy if you want to have a look at some time, but I do recommend it. I'll put a link that you can put in your description if you like, because it's a lovely book to look at. And one of the witches in that is Starhawk, who people of my age would recognize as a key name in the development of kind of witchcraft, particularly witchcraft that's tied in with the women's movement. And there's a beautiful portrait of her now in that. Well worth a look. And then another one that is again, I would recommend people have a look at, is another artist called Kiri Saw. Again, I think is a professor at a university in Los Angeles, associate professor. And she's done a brilliant set of photographs of the LA district where all the occult shops are. So they're a mixture of shop windows with neon signs and various items in them that kind of signify witchcraft, occult practice, and pictures of the practitioners themselves, the shop owners. So they vary from sort of quite straight portraiture to some that are quite conceptual, really, and beautifully done. And because both of these women are quite eminent and award-winning and exhibited and, you know, get work published in magazines and professional photographers, the quality of the photography is just, you know, so I kind of looked at those and thought, oh, what am I trying, you know, but they are inspirational. They are lovely images. So if you do get a chance to see those, I would recommend it to anyone.
Cool. It's nice to see the progression, though, isn't it, from the witch on the broom and the witch with the green face and the warts and all that, all the way up to present day normal witches.
And very much from witches being determined by the male gaze, the male fantasy figure, moving right up to witches where it's very much females having their own voice, their own control over the representation, and female photographers embracing that and giving that opportunity, if you like, allowing that expression. There's definitely, it kind of tracks the women's consciousness, if you like, movement throughout that century up till now in the way that they're represented, because in they are much more in the work of Denny, and very particularly some are, as we discussed earlier, very ordinary clothes, pass them in the supermarket, think there's anything witchy about them, and others very much embracing their persona as a lifestyle. It's their personality, it's not a persona, it's not a mask they put on, it's actually who they are. And that comes across very strongly in photographs, with some of them, you know, with really direct gaze and really strong representations. You feel the power of these women. It's a nice book. I like it.
Like goddesses.
Yeah.
Goddess poses. Love it.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's taken a long time, hasn't it, though? It's taken nearly a century to get there.
Yeah. But then again, that's the same century that the whole women's movement has moved forward. You know, it's kind of...
That's true.
Yeah, I know when I started my working life, like the Equal Pay Act only came in when I started my working life. So it's, you know, it's a... You kind of forget that it's that recent. It's part of our history and memory, some of these things. But
blow my mind.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, as I say, it was interesting because I'd started the process of doing the photos. And then I discovered this part way through, but it was lovely. It was like, yeah, it was quite validating that, you know, other professional photographers do it much better than me, but they actually thought it was worth doing this work as well because they were doing something similar. But the difference also with mine is that mine is representing pagans rather than witches. So there are people on different paths within my photographs, and there are males as well. Most of the witch work is focused on the female, apart from your Gerald Gardners and those sort of people playing the high priest role. But to actually get portraits of male pagan practitioners, which is kind of a nice balance really in the work that I did. So within it, I had a couple of the males. It was actually two males, one of whom was a kind of high priest of a Wiccan coven, and the other was a druid, a practicing druid. So they were on very different paths, but both very much embracing those spiritual paths that they'd chosen to follow and living that in their lives, if you see what I mean. So one of the pictures I did of the Wiccan high priest was in a local park where there was a stone, which actually is called the Witch's Stone, I found out since. And he's played around this stone since he was a boy. It's always been part of his mental picture of nature and the environment around him. And then recently he was able to handfast a couple of his friends at this stone. So it has a kind of personal meaning to him in that respect. And we did some pictures. Again, it's in a park, there's dog walkers going by, it's a busy place, there's a cafe up the top, not anywhere that you would think is particularly mystical, but there's this beautiful stone that kind of no one quite knows why it's there, but it's been called the Witch's Stone. A bit like a monolith really. It's a kind of tall stone up to about kind of head height. And so the pictures I got of him were kind of embracing this stone or leaning against it, kind of in connection with it. Did other pictures where he's waving his sword and other things, but the ones that I kind of chose in the final selection were very much these ones in this simple connection with the stone. And it's all about the expression on his face, this absolute kind of peaceful, like it looks like he's at home, sense of his face is showing that I'm at home here. And they're two of my favorite pictures really. And we talked earlier a bit about kind of how you represent something kind of ineffable and magical without it becoming too performative, and that's been my challenge all the way through this as my skills in Photoshop have grown, because I started out doing very straight portraiture. As I gained skills, I had the ability, and also I could see that there was an added flavor if I add a sort of magical overlay to things. And I'm not talking necessarily about, you know, big moon in the sky and sparks and things, although I have done that for fun. But on these, it was just like maybe changing the quality, the colouring and colour toning, and just adding maybe a little bit of kind of mist or texture to the pictures that helped enhance the atmosphere that I hoped the pictures were putting across. So in this one where the high priest is in connection with the stone, I've kind of blurred out the background quite a bit and made it softer and greener, and just so in a way he's encapsulated in a moment, in a bubble, in a kind of magical bubble within that very public place. That's kind of the approach I took with it, and that grew in the course of the project. At the beginning I was thinking, yeah, these are portraits, and one of the challenges was that because I was taking them at different times in different places, the light quality is really different, and photographing under trees with not much light ain't easy, and I found that as well. So there's lots I would do differently if I was going to do this project again, and I do still hope to expand it. It's kind of life has got in the way. Yeah, that I've learned a lot by doing it, and as my skills have increased, I think I would do things slightly differently if I did it again. But yeah, and I'm finding people in the photos and other people are responding more to the ones where I've just got this subtle sense of magic that I'm doing in post-production. I'm not want to do them, you know, make it seem like they're on top of a mountain with lightning coming down and less, Gandalf or anything
less,
like that.
Less is more.
Exactly. Just a little hint of something that enhances the quality of the photos, really, in the atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, I like the dapple effect you did on the one where I'm sat down, kid, and you did the dapple light.
I'd taken some photographs of the trees. Whenever I'm in one of the environments, I try to take pictures of that environment. So there was like some tree canopies, tree barks, and then I use those as overlays and textures. And so they, again, it's like the environment is blending in with the subject of the photography. And I found that's good. And also skies are beautiful, and sometimes using the sky as a texture. And it's a technique I've used on some of the recent photographs I've done with you and Jody for promoting this podcast as well, is using those kind of natural elements as textures and overlays in the photos to just enhance, try and create a feeling.
Yeah, no, it's a really lovely thing to do. The day we did it, I mean, I had so much fun. I didn't feel the cold until I actually got dressed. And then afterwards I'm like, bloody hell, I'm freezing.
You were definitely in your element in the sky club picture.
It
but you
great.
Were in all of them. And I think we were very fortunate. The light through the trees was very kind to us that day, so we did manage to get some beautiful picture to be face lit by natural light, I think.
Nah.
That's always the challenge, is finding the light, and particularly if someone comes in a black dress, which people
oh, I
do.
know. Yeah, cat, it's the worst
Working
colour
with
for...
that contrast range in a set of photos, it's, yeah, there's been some definitely some technical challenges that I've had to face. I had so much fun doing it. And as I say, it was a cold time of year. It was took them all between sort of, it was late September to middle of December. And yeah, some of those days were cold. But yeah, I did some beautiful shots and lovely. And there's a bittersweet nature, because some of those places that I took photographs of people don't exist in that form anymore. They don't have access to them anymore for various reasons. And one of the other people I took, her health has declined. And so she now wouldn't be able to do the things that she's doing in that photograph. And so it feels very much like we captured a moment in time as well. And that they're very bittersweet, particularly the ones where the person no longer has access to the location, because it meant so much to her through circumstances beyond her control. It's no longer available. I look back on those and it kind of gives me a lump in the throat, really. I feel a bit of a personal connection to everyone I photographed. And when you edit someone, you're staring at their face very closely. And so you feel like you know these people better than you actually do.
Oh, familiar.
And when you see them again, you go up and go, oh, like you're an old friend. But actually, you've only spent an hour and a half with them on that occasion. It's a very intimate experience doing a one-to-one shoot and talking about people's spirituality and how they want to be represented. It's a very privileged experience. And I really felt that. And I honour that. And I treasure that.
Yeah, and you can tell you make people feel at ease, which means you get, you know, better photographs because people know they're in a safe space with you and stuff. And that in itself is a big deal to be a photographer.
Thank you.
Can't really do that if people are not into you. Where can our listeners find you?
That's an interesting one. Some of my work is on Instagram. I tend not to update it. I've talked about doing a Facebook group for this, because I do have a list of people who I've said, yeah, I'm going to pick this back up again, and photographs who are keen to be photographed, and for various reasons I've just not been able to get round to it, and I would like to do that. So it would be nice to have somewhere, but in the absence of that, best place is probably my Instagram. I don't have all the pictures on there, but maybe after this podcast I'll go and upload a few more and put on there. But yeah, that's where you can find me. That's probably the best place to see my photography, is my Instagram, which is Beverly Thornton, Beverly with three E's. So yeah, please go on there and give me a follow, and comments welcome and what have you. And if you are in the West Yorkshire area and you don't mind someone who can't really, has got a lot of time to do it and is held back by physical things like a back that's going all the time at the minute, but you would like to be a photographic subject, a part of the project, because I would like to keep it going. I so enjoyed it. Ideally, I'd like three, you know, I'd like a pagan for every day of the year. I'd like a book that says 365 pagans.
Amazing. I love that.
Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
So
that would
good.
Be nice.
Yeah.
So a portrait for every day. So yeah, if you people are interested, just comment on your podcast and I'll make contact if I can.
Yeah, we'll link you up and everything. And recently Beverly did our pictures for the podcast and they're just so good. I really love them.
Oh, bless you.
Stood on the hill, and I like the one where I'm drinking coffee looking cheese.
Oh, that was
off.
Hilarious, that one, wasn't it? Yeah. You're trying to get across the kind of idea of, like, you know, you're a mother and trying to fit your spiritual practice in between real life. So there's Emma sort of looking like, oh, shagged out with him, drinking a cup of coffee. And then there's Jodie looking quite spiritual with her tarot cards.
I loved it. It was just so important to me to get a bit of humour in it, you know, rather than it being a serious photo shoot, because our podcast is sort of 50% serious and 50% silly.
Yeah.
And when you've got kids around, you know, you've always got to be silly. You've got to.
Yes,
so, and
true.
You caught it really well. I think it comes across pretty cool. And we'll slowly share them throughout the year. So lovely.
Great stuff. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, as they say. Yeah. Just keep being beautiful, all you pagan people, because I will turn up with my camera and capture you in all your diversity and your grittiness and your
beautiful selves.
Thanks very much, Wales.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye for now.
Save on quality sofas, sectionals, top brand mattresses, and more during Haverty's President's Day sale. Find the style of furniture you've been looking for at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.